Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chats, weekly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will, how are you?
I'm good. Hi, Carlton.
Hello. And this week we have Sage Abdullah with us from Jakarta in Indonesia. And Sage was a Google Summer of Code student in 2019, and he's been responsible for the CrossDB JSON field that we're hoping to land into 3.1, Django 3.1. Hi, Sage, how are you?
Great. How about you?
You're marvelous. Thank you for joining us. So we just wanted to have a chat with you and find out about yourself and about what how you got into programming and about the work you did for Google Summer of Code on Django and your experience there and all the rest. So one thing we quite often start with is just how about you tell us about your background and how you got into programming and perhaps how you found Django?
I'm from Jakarta, Indonesia. I'm in my third year as a computer science student at Universitas Indonesia. And as Carlton said, I was a participant in Google Summer of Code 2019 with Django, during which I implemented a CrossDB JSON field. How I got into programming, I think I first started coding. In the seventh grade. I believe it was Java, but I didn't get past basic input output. Though
that's my experience with Java as well.
Yeah. I was about to say that's everyone's experience with Java, no?
Yeah, I remember the book jumped straight to GUI after the Hello World console. I think I don't know what book that was. I don't remember. But I didn't continue after that. And in my ninth grade, I learned HTML and CSS, as everyone. And I was already familiar with XML in my sixth grade. I used to mod my Sony Ericsson phone back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Just hacking some stuff, the layouts and stuff. And then I continued to the JavaScript course, but it hurt my brain at the time. I think it still does, actually, with the modern JavaScript stuff.
It's not Python for sure.
Yeah, it's not Python for sure. And then in high school, in the 10th grade and the 11th grade, I learned Pascal to prepare for the National Science Olympiad in Informatics. Problem sets used Pascal mostly. I know it's quite ancient, but yeah, that's what we use.
Yeah, well, that's kind of cool because I know people who know Pascal, but they're all quite a lot older.
Yeah. So I learned Pascal for the National Olympiad in Informatics. It's basically discrete maths and competitive programming. So I learned a bit of C and C++, though I have forgotten a lot about that. And I only got through the provincial level, while the national winners, they will be delegates for IOI, the International Olympiad in Informatics. Yeah, but I didn't get past that. I only got through the provincial level. So for Python, it's quite a long story, but it's quite relevant to my GSOC experience. So if you don't mind.
We've got time. We want to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So in my 12th grade, the final year of high school, there was this competition by Wikimedia Indonesia called Besut Kode. Kode is Indonesian for code. It's an open source software development competition for high school and university students to help prepare them for Google Code and Google Summer of Code. So it's basically a minified, it's like a mini version of GCI and GSOC for students. It's divided into for high school and university students.
Okay.
During the competition, we were mentored by John Vandenberg. I don't know if you've heard that name. He's from Wikimedia Australia. He's currently a maintainer at Koala, the code formatter.
Okay.
Koala, haven't heard of it?
No.
Okay, so
there's a lot we haven't heard of though. So
yeah, there's so many.
Yeah, somebody suggested using Koala instead of Black in the mailing list. I think I remember reading that.
Oh, I missed that. I missed that. There were so many suggestions.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so for the competition, we used GitHub Classroom. And so how the competition worked, basically, we forked public repos into our private ones. And then we fixed some bugs and code style issues there. And once our mentor approved our fixes, we could send PRs to the real repository.
Okay, that's kind of
cool. That's fantastic.
That's kind of nice. That's like a sort of sandbox where you can...
Yeah. I think our mentor was kind of afraid of, you know, letting the kids out there. We were basically under the... we were minors. So yeah, he didn't want us to communicate directly unless we actually have some real work.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Okay. So during the competition, I learned how to use linters and CI surfaces to integrate them. And one of the repos I worked on was the Media Wiki Parser from Hell. It's the name. you can look it up on GitHub. And it's built on Python. But during that time, I didn't know Python at all. And I mean, I could make sense of things. I could read the code, but fixing the code style was quite tricky because I didn't know if what I'm fixing does not break anything.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So yeah, that was my first experience with Python. But ever since then,
I
didn't learn Python.
Can I ask at that point? Sure. So you've mentioned Java, you've mentioned Pascal, you've mentioned C, you've mentioned C++, right? And then so you come to Python, and one of the things, you know, people sometimes use it in textbooks, and they say the reason we're using Python in this textbook is not because you have to do this in Python, but because if you know any other programming language, you can read Python. You may not know every details, but it will make sense to you. And from those kind of much harder languages, like they're much more pernickety, I think. Yeah. Like, was it not like, how was that first learning experience? That first, like, okay, I see, you know.
Okay, so reading Python code was actually pretty easy, but I didn't have time to actually learn Python at that time. Right. So it wasn't until my first semester at university in which we actually used Python. And coming from Pascal and Java, Python is it's a breeze, really. It's so much easier to learn. I don't know, it was such a relief. I mean, so before I got into university, I was actually not really sure if I want to go into the computer science path because of my experience with Pascal and Java, and I was like, no, it's not a very good experience. I mean, it's not very easy, you know.
Yeah.
But when I actually learned Python, I was like, oh, I didn't know things could be so much easier. I mean, like, sorting and stuff, you know.
But you got through it. I mean, because I learned how to code when I was quite a bit older than you are now. And Python was my first true programming languages. And then later I filled in a bit of Java and C. And you know, in comparison, I was just like, what am I doing? Like, why would I ever, you know, as hard as it is to learn Python, you know, there to go the other way, I'm just like, no, I'm not going to learn ancient Greek. You know, that's like what Carlton spends his time on. So I'm always impressed that people can get through and in the United States as well, there's still quite a bit that at the high school level, if they have anything, which most don't, it's in Java, I believe, is what the AP exam, that's like the advanced placement. So yeah, I'm impressed anyone can get through those other languages. They don't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and the thing I love about Python is that with the things I learned in the first semester, I could actually build some pretty cool stuff that's actually useful in real life, you know. In a short time, I built a chatbot on Line. It's an IM app we use. It's by Never, if you've heard about it, but I think it's not widely used outside Asia. But anyway, I basically built something like an IRC chatbot using Python, and it was really cool because I was only in my first semester, and seeing that I can actually build some stuff that is actually useful is really good.
Yeah, I think that's what it's all about. Like, in my books and tutorials, I generally try to get people to build something and then kind of backfill all the information rather than making them do it the hard way, because most people aren't programming for the sake of programming. You're programming because you want to build stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you learn how to build like an IRC? I mean, how much mentoring did you have? Because that's something that it's easy to say, but like, was there a person or a class that taught you how to do that? Did you Google around? What was that process like as a beginner?
Okay. So, what I built was a chatbot. You can use like slash something. I can connect my code with APIs like a weather API, and then I can just slash weather Jakarta, and then I would get the output. In university, we are only taught about like string processing and using conditionals and loops, but I take it a step further by utilizing packages on PyPy. With my experience during the competition in high school, the Bisut Code competition, I learned how to use pip and stuff. So from there, it's basically just pip install something. I can connect to some web APIs using requests and just get some data. And then once I've got the string that that I want to send to users, I just hook it up with the line API. If you've heard about Telegram, just imagine a Telegram bot. Yeah, just like that. It's not very hard if you have experience. It's not about experience. It's more about the fact that you want to read, that you are not lazy to read the docs, I think.
Yeah.
Google around.
Well, I'm impressed that you came into university at that point where you knew that you didn't have to write everything yourself, that there are these packages, that it's the superpower of any language, but especially Python. Because I think that is when because I deal with beginners, when they're just starting out, they think they have to write everything themselves. And there's no sense of, it's almost like I make the analogy of shopping at a grocery store. Like, you can just pull things off the shelf that way smarter people have built, like Django, and you can just use it and you don't have to understand all of it yourself. You just need a teeny bit of understanding. But getting to that point, that's what I'm, as a teacher, always interested in, because I think on some level you just have to build a bunch of stuff to understand that requests exist, that you don't have to do everything from scratch. And then, because beginners will hear, I prototyped something in a weekend, and they think, well, how is that possible? But, you pull down three packages from PyPI, and the actual code you had to write isn't that much, but it's a leap for people to get there. So that's great that you were at that point.
Yeah, that's actually what what makes me love Python, because back in high school, I was using Pascal, and even to implement a sorting method, I didn't know that there are also libraries. I believe there should be a library for Pascal as well, right? But since I was learning programming for competition, it was more like more about implementing the algorithm that is actually already built in most programming languages by now.
Yes.
Programming felt hard in high school for me, because it wasn't about building stuff, but it's more like designing the algorithm, and that's way harder.
Yeah, I think they teach programming completely backwards. Everyone does, but they make you do all that hard foundational stuff first with no context. And then in practice, you rarely use it. And the times at which you would need to use it is when you're at Google or something and you're well into your career and you have huge challenges. And so people think that programming is discrete math and memorizing, and it's really more playing and sandboxing. I think. I don't know, Carlton, what would you say?
I do believe that it's important, though. I mean, to learn.
Yes, at some point.
It's still important. But yeah. If you're learning, if you're starting to learn programming, it can be intimidating, I guess.
I mean, so you're doing computer science, and so they you have to do all that, right? You have to go through the algorithms course and implement.
Yeah, in my third semester.
Yeah, you implement all these things, but in Python now.
So in my second and third semester, we use Java for the object-oriented programming stuff.
Yeah.
And the data structures and algorithms, we use Java. But in the third semester, we learn web design and programming. We use Python. And that's actually how I got into Django, as we use Django.
Okay.
That's fantastic, because I would say most universities in the United States don't teach web development as part of the core curriculum. So they just don't teach it. If they do, it's an elective where there's really no resources. And so that's fantastic. But I think it's, you know, the web is pretty important. I think it should be part of the curriculum, but it really isn't in most American programs that I'm aware of. So that's good. So did they do Flask, or did they just jump right to Django for your course?
Okay. They just jump right into Django, but... since 2019, I think since last year, Flask is being taught in the first semester, near the end of the semester, as a final project.
Hmm.
The students are asked to write a simple web app using Flask.
So I have so many questions about Google Summer of Code, because I don't know much about it, and I suspect most listeners don't either, though... You just went through it, Carlton. You've been mentoring it for quite a while.
Well, no.
So what is
last year was my first year.
No?
So
I thought you've been doing it for a while.
No. Like last, February before last, Tim Graham put an email on going, well, are we going to do Google Summer of Code? And I was like, oh, well, you know, and lots of people, prospective students said, well, yeah, come on, we want to apply. We want to do it. So, okay, I put in the application. It was my first year going through it. It was a bit like this year I've had a bit more warning. So I was sort of mentally ready for it to come up. But yeah, it was like, oh, okay, let's put in the application, let's review the applications, let's get it going.
From the mentor side, how many applications come in? What's that process
like?
And then Sage, I want to ask you, because you wrote a fantastic proposal, but you know what it was like on your end, because the deadline's coming up for this year. I think it's March 31st.
Yeah, yeah. So it's the end of this week, really. But so we had like about, I don't know, 50 or 60 people put in applications, of which we had mentoring capacity for two. And, you know, because that's our biggest issue is mentors, because the code base is quite mature and there aren't that many people that know it super well. And those people need to be available and have time. And so, you know, we could take on more applicants, but we just can't. So, you know.
And it was you, Marius, Adam Johnson, and there was a fourth?
Yeah. Raphael. Helped out. But yeah, so that's our issue. And so this year I'm going to put an email on the list this week saying, come on, we've got some good projects, we've got some good proposals coming in, have we got the mentors to be able to,
and you know, the Django developers list, you're going to put that on.
And depending on how many responses we get for that, and how many, you know, because you know, I can help you know, guide a student, but you know, the depths of the migration framework, for instance, you know, I need Marcus or I need Simon to have the time and the capacity to do it. And if they can't, then we can't take on that project. It's just, that's just the reality of it.
So was there, and again, I apologize, I'm so ignorant, but were there two students last year, or is it just Sage?
Yeah, so Path as well. Path Patel did one on the form sets, stuff on form sets.
Oh, okay, we'll link to that. So Sage, what was your, what was the process like on your end? We've linked to your proposal. But what was the, and I know you, I think you mentioned this in the proposal, but why cross database JSON field? What made you think of that for Django?
Oh, okay. So it wasn't actually my idea. I think Carlton, did you write it? I mean, I believe it was in the mailing list. I read about it, the discussion with Tim and some other folks. In Google Summer of Code, the organizations also provide a list of ideas that students can, they can either pick one of those ideas or they can create their own idea and submit a proposal for that. But in Django's list of ideas for GSOC 2019, the top of that list was the CraftsDB JSON field. I'm not sure if that was actually sorted by priority or something, but so personally, in my experience, so during my web design and programming course in the third semester, I came across the need of a JSON field to store some small data for the user to be fetched by JavaScript. And it's just, it wasn't worth it to store it into the model. And I just want something quick that can be loaded by JavaScript. And I thought that something like a JSON field would do the job. And I looked it up. It turns out that Django has it, but it's only for Postgres.
Right. And this is the case for a number of features like search and a whole bunch of other ones. Postgres has more support than the other databases.
Module. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I was actually using Postgres, so let me just explain a bit. In the course, we were required to deploy our apps to Heroku. I think it didn't have to be Heroku, but it was recommended because it was easy just to set up a small app and so that the teachers and the grading team can assess the web app. And we use GitLab and deploy our web app from there to Heroku. On Heroku, we use Postgres because it's not possible to use SQLite as Heroku has this ephemeral storage that basically gets rewritten if you deployed your app. And so the recommended option was to use Heroku Postgres. So it was technically possible for me to use the JSON field on Heroku, but I use SQLite on my local laptop and I hadn't learned about databases at that point. And I only know that you can store data in it, but I haven't installed Postgres on my machine. So I just wanted something that can work on both SQLite and Postgres. So seeing that there's no such option unless I use something from third-party packages, there are some JSON field packages out there. But I think it didn't worth the effort because I just wanted something quick. So what I did was I use a text field and then basically just JSON dumps and JSON loads to it using the built-in Python library to serialize Python dictionaries into JSON strings. That's what I did. So that was in my third semester. It was until December. And then I have been thinking about joining Google Summer of Code I have heard about Google Summer of Code since in high school during the competition with Wikimedia. So I was already aiming to participate in Google Summer of Code I also participated in Google Code, and it's basically the high school version of Google Summer of Code. And I was in my final year as a high school student, and there was a lot of exams and tryouts. So I didn't have time to fully commit into Google Code, and I didn't win the grand prize. And so I was like, well, there's still Google Summer of Code. I have to join it when I got into university. So in my first year, I actually signed up on the Google Summer of Code website, but I didn't write a proposal because I didn't know what organization and what project I could work on because I was only in my second semester. I only learned about I just learned about object-oriented programming during that time. It was the first time for me, and I don't think I have the knowledge to participate in GSOC during my first year. So I didn't submit a proposal. I just wait for the next year. And then the next year, after finishing my third semester and entering my fourth, I read about the JSON field idea on the mailing list of Django. Okay, so I think I actually read about it in the, I think Carlton has put up the GSOC list of ideas way before that, and I read that page when it was still under development. It was, I think, some of the, what does the Django wiki uses? Is it Markdown?
Yeah, it's not Markdown. It's, I don't know, there's probably some technical name for it, but it's this weird wiki high syntax thing, which I'm terrible at. It always takes me like 10 minutes to type it up, and then like 3 hours getting the formatting exactly correct. Not because it's particularly hard, just because I don't know it.
Yeah, I saw that there were still syntax errors, so that the formatting didn't show up properly, and I was like, well,
you must have been the first one there, though. You must have been the first one there,
because I was I wanted to participate in Google Summer of Code so bad, but I didn't know what project I should work on. And after taking the web design and programming and used Django, I loved it, and I feel like maybe I can contribute. So I've been reading a lot of the past Google Summer of Code for Django. There wasn't much information about that. I think Django didn't accept students the previous year.
Yeah, there'd been one or 2 years without any students. Like, I mean, but, you know, there's been a long history where, you know, a few students each year and then a couple of years off. And then, you know, I think that's more to do with people power than anything else.
Yeah, so I wanted to see if any projects were selected during in the previous year, but it turned out that there wasn't any in the past 2 years, I think. And so I was skeptical at first, but when I saw that wiki page that you wrote, I read about the JSON field idea, and I was like, this is what I needed last semester. And
your story is so good as well, because like to use a text field and just serialize the JSON into it, like that's what the third party packages out there have done for years and years, like Django JSON field and whatnot. It's just a text field and it uses JSON dump and JSON load, and that's fine. And that was discussed years ago.
On the
issue tracker, and it was closed. There's no, we don't want a field that just does that. That's not good enough. You know, that can just be in a third party package. That's not going in the core. But then in between that, Postgres got JSON field, and then like MySQL got it, and Oracle got it, and SQLite got it. So all the supported databases had it, and so it was like, right, now this is time. And so it was perfect for Sage to come along.
Yeah, it was I don't know, probably, I mean, in my blog I wrote it's probably destiny or something. Yeah. I mean, it just so conveniently happened, and I don't know, it's like a miracle almost.
So in your proposal, I'm sure this was part of why you were chosen beyond picking a good project, is you'd already submitted some patches to Django itself. I'm curious if you could just talk about, because I mean, Carlton and I spent a lot of time trying to make that easier for people. You were able to figure it out. What was that process like for you, figuring out how to submit? I think it was at least two patches that were merged in. What was that process like?
Okay, so I may be a bit biased because I have previously contributed to open source projects previously. However, I think that the most important part that if you want to contribute to open source is basically don't be lazy to read, seriously. I mean, there's a lot of things to read, but it's actually, some of them are actually pretty laid out that if you actually read it, you can actually contribute. But I think one of the things that may be off-putting to some people is that, yeah, it's pretty long. There's a lot of links. I mean, let's say you are reading the contributing guide, and then it says that if you want to learn more about this, you can go here, and then you read along, and then there's another link, and it may be a bit overwhelming because some people may have not be very familiar with all of the things that's put out in the guide. But
yeah, so it's like 5,000 or 6,000 yeah. words in the contributing guide, which is
I've almost thought, Carlton, I haven't mentioned this to you, that if there were a if you like froze Django 3.0 and you had like a dummy version that people could fix a documentation ticket or something where they could, you know, feel like they merged something even though they didn't, just to get over that hump of this is a longer term project for me, but I, you know, so, to get some sort of quick win instead of it's a lot of words and will Django even take it? I don't know. I mean, as you said, Sage, though, if you know, because if someone hasn't contributed to open source before, it is intimidating for sure.
Last month, there was this event by one of the Pandas maintainers, Pandas, the data science library. Okay, so Pandas has this thing called documentation sprint in which you can contribute to their documentation. It's even small contributions like fixing a missing period in their documentation. But the thing is, I think it's easier for Pandas because the documentation is actually built into the code itself using the doc strings. And then there was they use a lot of tools that can analyze whether which parts of the documentation need fixing, like what rules are broken in the documentation for each functions. And for Pandas, the documentation is mostly just descriptions of functions that are available. But for Django, we have the guide type of documentation, like tutorial types. And we also have the, I mean, it's more, it needs more explanation. I mean, more examples of using, I mean, it you can just call a function and expect what it returns, like what's in Pandas. For Django, it's a bit different. So the same approach for the document for, I mean, if you want to do documentation sprints for Django, it may have to use a slightly different format because of the way the Django documentation is designed. And also probably not a lot of people is familiar with RST.
Yeah, restructured text. It can be tricky. I've recently, like, you know, a couple of years into fellowing, I'm just coming round to it because you can do the cross-linking between attributes and things like that, whereas Markdown doesn't have that, and I kind of like it. But yeah, there's a learning curve again. It's like another one of these markup formats you have to learn.
Yeah, but that's just for documentation, though. I mean, if you're talking about more about code document code contributions, I think, okay, so before that, for the contributing guide, I think what can be improved is, I saw that there is another page that is specifically for new contributors. That's a good start, but I think if we can have something like a step-by-step guide that is more, I don't know, more, what's the word? More simple, and just maybe we can have some screenshots like describing the process of for example forking Django and then cloning it, installing it into your virtual environment, and then creating a commit, and then until you have this screenshot of a pull request, probably it's a bit more easy to understand because you know, people can imagine it more easily by looking at the screenshots and seeing what is happening when you are contributing, probably. I mean, I don't know about that.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, a couple of DjangoCon sprints I've been at where trying to get people up and running and, you know, just working through that first tutorial is difficult.
Yeah. Also, for track the tickets, I think you can improve it by adding more labels for the difficulty. So it's not just easy pickings or not, but maybe easy, medium, and hard. So, I mean, right now it's basically just either it's easy or it's not. And the not easy part is like, it can range from like really hard or not far off from easy picking actually. So yeah.
Yeah, no, there's lots of tickets which are not rocket science, but then there's some which really are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I was telling Sage like, as we discussed with Mikey Ariel about a docs fellow or someone who can come in with fresh eyes and have that perspective on all the stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I mean, there's a big tart. I mean, for instance, the advice to new contributors, I point people to that, but that's in a way that should be front and center and isn't. And that's a kind of information architecture problem. It's not that the content isn't there. There's a tutorial on creating your first patch where, you know, it goes through and you do a fake ticket and you kind of, you fix a bug and it's like, oh, okay, that would be how it worked. But that needs to be brought out so it's easy to find.
Yeah, there's also another program called Season of Docs. Did Django participate?
We applied, but it was the first season and they said they had you know, 300 applicants and 14 places or something. So we didn't get in last year. But if it comes up again, I will apply again because I think it's a good, it's something that Django, like, so, you know, if you look at the track, The big things on the tickets are like the ORM, the admin, and then documentation. There's lots of documentation tickets that we could fix, and there's lots of issues that perhaps we could resolve.
Also, some of my friends have asked me like how to start because they were also interested in contributing, and some of them actually are looking to apply for Google Summer of Code with Django this year, and they were having troubles with finding tickets that they can work on because, yeah, it's like I said, between the easy pickings and not, we cannot really know which tickets are actually doable just by reading the description. Sometimes we have to actually know the context.
No, it is tough. It is tough. Like I always say to people, look, so I try and at the Django cons, I've tried to run a sprint and a workshop where we get people contributing. And I say, look, it's okay. So here's how you can filter and show people filtering the track. But then I say, look, find a ticket that kind of grabs your attention and then spend some time with it. And that's the difficulty is that you do actually have to spend the time digging into the ticket and finding out what it's all about in order to work out if you can address it.
Well, we're coming up on time. Are there any projects or other things you want to talk about, Sage?
Can I have something more to say? It's just an advice for students looking to participate in Google Summer of Code, or basically not just Google Summer of Code, but more into open source in general. If you think that you cannot do it, well, the truth is most likely you actually can, because when I wrote my proposal for JSON build, I haven't actually learned about databases and I had never executed an SQL statement into a DBMS terminal before. And yeah, it was actually, I was just reading the docs and just imagine how it would work, but I didn't actually know what I was doing, but thankfully in the end it worked. So if you feel like you don't have the capacity, or you feel like your experience is not enough or something like that, it's basically just those thoughts away and just, I don't know, believe in yourself, I guess.
I hope this podcast and your experience helps even more people apply, you know, this year and going forward, because if there are mentors like Carlton and the others who are generous with their time, it, you know, makes a big impact on Django, and it's a good experience for people to get into the Django contributing world who maybe wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, no, entirely. I mean, Google Summer of Code has been a big boom for Django over the years. Big thanks to Sage for, well, A, coming on, but B, your efforts putting together the Crosby TB JSON field, because that should be going to Django 3.1, and it's going to be a great tool for everybody. Like, this exact example is the one that I have in mind of using SQLite locally, just quick development. Oh, I don't have to spin up Postgres just to prototype something. And then, yeah, okay, I'm going to move on to Postgres at a later date. So it's just super. And yeah, and, you know, Oracle and MySQL as well.
Yeah, great. Well, Sage, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and your work.
Yeah, thanks, Sage.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Django Chat. Join us next time.